Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Satch Jain, Chief Executive Officer at Carium Health. Satch, welcome to the show.
Matt, nice to meet you and very happy to be here.
So what I always like to do at the beginning of every conversation is give my guest a chance to provide more of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do. So Satch, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I'm Satch. I'm founder and CEO of Carium Health, which is a digital health company. I'm personally a computer scientist and engineer by training, and I entered healthcare over a decade ago and spent a lot of time in the guts of our healthcare payment model. And, you know, we are doing some interesting things to really make a difference and change how we pay for healthcare, how we deliver healthcare, and how we experience healthcare.
So kind of with that background, what first brought you into the healthcare industry?
Yeah, so back in 2008, 2009 timeframe, I was looking to take an operating role and moving away from my professional services background. And I was recruited in a hospital rev cycle company based out of Chicago. These are the companies that hospitals hire to maximize their reimbursement against health plans, against patients. If you think about the darkest corners of healthcare, this is absolutely one of them. And that's where I cut my teeth in healthcare. And this became clear to me very quickly that how inefficient our healthcare payment model is, leading to unnecessary cost, leading to bad patient experience. And I felt there had to be a better way. So that became a passion. And I spent a lot of time working with payers and providers in healthcare to learn more, and spent also a lot of time working in healthcare reform. That's where an idea emerged, and that eventually became Carium Health.
So what was that idea that emerged?
The idea was that in US, we pay for healthcare like we are buying a car part by part. Which is how we do it in our fee-for-service PPO models. Everyone is busy billing for all different parts of the car, whether it's a door or a muffler or an engine, but no one is really worried about whether the car actually works or the driver has a good experience. And my journey in healthcare has been about trying to find a solution where you can buy the whole car and it comes with a warranty. So during my work in healthcare reform, almost a decade ago, I came across the idea of value-based care and how payment models like bundle payments, to me, felt like buying the whole car and it comes with a warranty. So I felt that if we could help move away our payment model from fee-for-service to bundle payments, there is a huge opportunity to reduce cost, and improve member experience, improve outcomes while aligning provider incentives.
And kind of as you were studying those different types of models, you know, the VPC and the bundle payment models, is there a particular construct that you see works better than others? Or, and then also maybe the corollary question of, are there particular VPC models that you think should be let go of because they're not achieving the results that you would hope for?
The two primary models that have gained traction or have been around are, you know, bundle payments and ACOs. I personally used to be a big believer in ACOs, but over a period of time, I realized that ACOs are a bridge too far for most of the providers to adopt, to move away from taking zero risk today to taking full risk in ACO arrangements across all different specialties of care. Bundle payments to me felt like a right step for providers to learn to take risk. And you know, they can take risk in specific specialties like MSK or cardiovascular or GI based upon how well they are, how well those service lines are run within that provider setting, and then just build up on top. So it just felt like a more elegant way for providers to learn to take risk and scale as they are gaining more comfort.
And when you're thinking about the bundle payments, you know, I guess maybe to help level set it, can you just describe, you know, what are the component parts of a bundle payment and how does it actually operate?
So as I mentioned, in our current fee-for-service world, it is like buying a car part by part, right? Where let's say you are going for a surgical episode like hip replacement, there will be dozens and dozens of bills that will be generated for one episode of care. So there'll be bill for anesthesiologist, surgeon, facility, DME, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And if you do that, something somewhere will go wrong. And that just leads to really bad experience for everyone involved. And after all said and done, there is no guarantee that the procedure will go well. And if it doesn't go well, you'll go back to the provider and you will, you know, you'll be in the hook to pay even more, even when, you know, you didn't get the best quality of care. Bundle payments basically encompass everything that is involved in that episode of care, from pre-op to actual surgery to post-op. And it typically comes with a warranty. So providers' incentives are well aligned right away that the surgery should go correct at the get-go. And if not, they will have to cover any readmissions or complications for free of charge. So it just makes everyone involved in that episode of care, whether it's anesthesiologists or surgeons or whoever, to coordinate better to make sure that the outcome is a success. Otherwise, it's a financially not a good position to be in.
Yeah, no, I like your use of the word coordinate there, because as you said, if they're not all working collaboratively and in concert, then someone could easily, you know, cause a spike in cost that is going to impact everybody. You know, so, you know, I think as you've said a couple of times, it, you know, by increasing that efficiency and the efficacy, at the end of the day, you're going to improve the patient experience, which probably then creates a circular positive feedback, because if you have a good experience, you get, you know, other positive kind of elements that can trail off of that as well.
Absolutely. I mean, this is all very much correlated, and it's not if you improve quality, that means you are reducing readmissions, complications down the road. That means you are improving cost. So it's to your point, it's a cycle that repeats every time you do it correctly.
So kind of thinking about the bundle payments, you know, what are you focused on today in terms of, you know, kind of some of the cost control measures or, you know, helping to improve patient experience and patient satisfaction?
At Carrum Health, when we started the company 7 years ago, the mission was to help the system move away from fee-for-service to value-based care arrangement like bundle payments. And our focus initially has been on surgical care, which is the biggest spend area of employers. Roughly half of the employer's benefit spend is on surgical care, and it's a complete wild west. There is typically no correlation between the cost of the procedures and the quality of the procedures. Employers also pay roughly 2.5x for these standard surgical procedures than what Medicare pays. And almost a quarter of the surgeries are unnecessary. I got one myself and still upsets me. And so to address a lot of these challenges, what we did at Carrum Health, we built industry's first Centers of Excellence platform that connects self-insured employers directly with top providers using standard bundle payment arrangements. And by doing so, we are able to bring down the surgical case spend by almost half. We use a combination of unit cost reduction for these procedures with unnecessary surgery avoidance. treatments. And both of those factors lead to reduction of almost 50% in the surgical costs of the employers. And we do that while dramatically improving member outcomes and experience. Today, we are working with over 100 plus employer groups across the nation in both public and private sector. We're working with several Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies, such as 3M, United Airlines, US Foods, Quest Diagnostics, et cetera, and state governments like State of Maine. On the provider side, we are partnering with the best of the best institutes in US, including Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Johns Hopkins, Rush Medical Center, Stanford, et cetera. And by making those connections, employers immediately see a huge impact in their surgical care cost while helping employees in a situation which is very stressful because getting a surgery is in many ways, a life-changing event, and employees need support, employees need some empathy and guidance to make sure they get on the other side with the best possible outcome. And in some cases, the best possible outcome is no surgery. And the way we have built this model, it enables those outcomes to happen.
You know, I think there's a lot to unpack there. And I think one of the kind of the first topic I'd like to explore is, you know, that concept of an unnecessary surgery. So can you help define what that actually covers?
Given how providers are incentivized today in our fee-for-service model, there is a perverse incentive to do more than what is right. And as a result, we see this huge issue of unnecessary surgeries happening. By some estimate that have been done, almost a third to a quarter of the surgeries are unnecessary in the US. And the reason they are unnecessary is because the quality of life of a member could perhaps have been better if a less invasive treatment would have been tried instead of being quick to cut and do a surgery. The way we have built the model out, it neutralizes providers' incentive to do surgeries and also just compensating them appropriately in the process so that, you know, they are incentive neutral whether to move forward with the surgery or not.
I think that's a very interesting approach because, as you said, you know, people will typically act based upon the incentives that are placed in front of them. And, you know, as you're describing, if you can place the incentive or place kind of equal incentives to either pursue, you know, a non-invasive treatment that could lead to a better outcome and then focus on the invasive treatment when it's more, you know, kind of more strictly necessary,
right,
you've removed the drive to go only in one direction.
Exactly. And it has been, the primary issue that just leads to a lot of these unnecessary surgeries. And if an unnecessary surgery happens, it's such a bad outcome for the member who has a huge impact on the rest of the quality of life because, you know, there are things that have happened that are irreversible. I myself got an unnecessary surgery on my armpit. And in hindsight, we realized that was completely unnecessary and still bothers me enormously. And it's also a really bad outcome for the employers who did not have to pay for their surgery when it was unnecessary. So taking those unnecessary surgeries out is a huge part of the CARE mission. And the way we have aligned incentives of the providers using assessment bundles that we put in place, it has reduced the proportion of these unnecessary surgeries by 30%. RAND Corporation, which is a big think tank, conducted an independent peer-reviewed study on CARAM, and they validated that when employers implemented CARAM, there was a 30% reduction in unnecessary surgeries.
No, those are pretty significant, kind of improved outcomes and changes in behavior. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Satch Jain from CARAM Health. We've been talking about, you know, bundle payments and then leading into unnecessary surgery. And kind of where I'd like to go next you know, it goes back to another piece of, you know, kind of the mission that you were talking about, which is not just that you're trying to address the misaligned incentives that foster unnecessary surgery, but you're talking about bringing employers and the health systems together to, it sounds like, directly contract with each other for the bundles that you've helped create. So can you talk about some of the challenges and, you know, kind of surprises that you've seen as you've brought, you know, the employers and the systems together, since I think most people would typically expect there's an insurance company in the middle of that somewhere?
Yeah, the one of the biggest surprises that we see is that when we speak with an employer and ask them, do you have any idea about your surgical care span, how big it is? They typically cannot answer that question. The way employers receive the reports from their carriers about their total benefit span, it is typically broken down by specialties that in, you know, orthopedics, this is the span in spine, this is the span in oncology, in cardiovascular, these are the span. But there is no horizontal layer where an employer is given an insight that this is your overall surgical care span, and it is typically 40 to 50% of their total span. And you might have heard of, you know, so many digital health companies doing a lot of great work to change how we, you know, practice and experience healthcare in US, but most of those companies are focused on primary care and chronic care. Surgical care has been largely untouched by the whole digital health revolution that is happening. And, you know, it is, it's unbelievable that that part of the span is roughly half of the total span of the employers. So we are trying to shine light on that span and educate employers that why they should pay attention to it and what are the different ways they can manage that span better while helping employees in the process.
What are some of the tools that help to shine the light on, you know, that cost impact and, you know, kind of to help expand out that data? Because, you know, I think you just said that a lot of employers aren't getting, you know, right, the level of detail that might allow them to more readily understand the level of spend on surgical care.
So we have published a lot of white papers on this topic based upon some macro data analysis that we have done that highlight typically how much employers spend on their surgical care and what percentage of their employees are responsible for driving that spend. It's typically 5 to 10% of the members who go through a procedure in a year are driving this 40 to 50% of the spend. So it's a huge, huge number, and it is addressable by making sure this small set of members are educated and have access to a solution that can guide them in the right direction and make sure they have access to the best quality of care. We, as we engage with employers in a one-on-one setting, we also conduct claims analysis for them that makes it very easy to understand that based upon their claims history, where those claims are going and what portion of those claims are going through surgical care, what portion of those claims are going through, you know, episodes that Carrum Health covers today. So it's a fairly black and white process, and it's typically almost an eye-opener for an employer to understand what they did not know before.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably absolutely right in terms of the eye-opener aspect to it, because it's, you know, so many employers have self-funded health plans or they're, you know, funneling a lot of money over to it, but it's very, probably very rare that they would have internal expertise to fully appreciate what they're trying to manage. So it does require, you know, assistance and someone being able to break it down and make it, you know, present the information in a much more understandable format.
That is absolutely right. You know, the proliferation of point solutions in healthcare that are targeting self-insured employers has exponentially increased over years. But the size of the benefits departments has largely stayed the same, if not has gone down over the same period of time. So the pressure on benefits leaders to get a good sense of where different solutions are focused on, which solutions truly impact their cost and quality continuum versus, you know, those are nice to haves. It's a lot to decipher. And so we take this as our role in this space to educate employer about this specific area, which is, you know, almost half of their total spend. And it's getting a lot of attention.
No, I think that's great because it's, you know, I would imagine in an area where some people might be resistant to trying to have to dive into it because they'll, you know, just say, oh, well, someone else is taking care of that for me. Or, you know, kind of, as you said, it's so it can be so difficult to understand because vested parts of the industry might be setting it up that way to maintain control over whatever aspect that they're helping to run.
That is exactly right. And also historically, there has been a lot of noise in this space about what truly the spend is and how solutions like centers of excellence can truly impact that spend. And what has been a huge breakthrough is earlier this year, as I mentioned, RAND published a peer-reviewed study on this space where they studied CARAM employers and saw the impact of using our solution before and after implementation. And they found out that after employers implemented CARAM, their surgical spend for the procedures that went through CARAM went down by 45%, while 30% of the unnecessary surgeries were avoided. And when the surgeries did happen, the quality outcomes were 3 to 4x better. So you combine all of that, and given it is an organization like RAND that has conducted the study, it helped enormously to educate the space about you know, why employers should pay attention to this area of care, and why solutions like ours can truly make a huge impact on both the cost as well as quality for the employers.
And kind of thinking about the cost and quality aspects, and kind of circling back around a little bit to some of what we talked about, where it can be difficult to get clear information or, you know, clear responses, you know, are there any outside factors like any regulations or other government or kind of third-party action that you've seen that have helped to free up and make it easier to get at some of the data that you find to be helpful and, you know, getting some eyes to be opened?
I will say, I mean, from a regulatory standpoint, a big event was, you know, healthcare reform over a decade ago that created incentives for providers to try bundle payments for Medicare. And where we are today, it is fair to say that led to, you know, change of the mindset among providers to think differently. But we believe that just the regulatory obligations are not necessarily going to change the needle for the providers. So at CARAM Health, what we have tried to do is to create the right financial incentives for providers to partner with us in these bundle payment arrangements. And they see the huge upside where by partnering with CARAM and being able to deliver care in a bundle payment setting, they see increase in the volume, while also, you know, by being very cost efficient, they are able to improve their profit margins in these models. So I will say while regulations help create it, this space, but now it is being driven by having the right financial incentives in place for providers to participate and do well in these arrangements.
Yeah, and kind of arguably that's the ideal transition that you would think would occur, where it's, you know, one of the older adages is Medicare will implement a change that then kind of sets the precedent for the private and commercial markets to build upon and further iterate, where you've got some freedom to you know, kind of innovate without the regulatory constraints. But believe it or not, our conversation is already almost out of time. So I want to ask one final question and kind of give you a little chance to speculate or just have some fun. But you know, if you had the power to make one immediate change to healthcare, what would you do?
I think we do believe that in the 5 to 10 years from now, fee-for-service will continue to shrink dramatically, and it needs to shrink for providers to focus and move towards value-based care models. So, if I have a magic wand, I will. Both from, Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial standpoint, figure out a way for providers to dramatically move away from fee-for-service style care delivery to a value-based care delivery.
And I think that would be a pretty fascinating change to see occur more quickly. But as I said, believe it or not, we are already out of time. So I want to thank my guest, Satch Jain, for a great conversation today.
Thank you, Matt. It's a pleasure to be here.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.